Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Friends with Money. I'm your host, Michelle Baltazar, editor-in-chief here at Money. Thank you for joining us. It's been an intense few weeks in the Middle East, with a conflict widening beyond Gaza, disrupting shipping lanes and pushing oil prices sharply higher. As tensions rise, markets are responding, and one of the clearest reactions has been in defense shares. Very quickly, in the U.S., the S&P Aerospace and Defense Select Industry Index is up about 75% over the past year. And as an example here at home, listed company DroneShield saw its share price spike from $1.09 12 months ago to $3.90 this month. But it has traded between 80 cents and $6.70 over the year as a sharp reminder of market volatility. So in this podcast, we're going to talk to an investment expert about what the defense sector actually is, why it matters, and how to think about your long-term exposure to it without the panic or the hype. With me is Alex Jamieson, founder and principal from Jamieson Private Wealth. Alex, welcome to Friends with Money.
Thanks very much.
Now, definitions first. So what counts as defense?
Yeah, I think traditionally you sort of thought about, you know, your jet fighters and big naval boats and submarines. Like, we're pretty familiar with submarines in Australia. The sector, though, has really, really expanded. So now it's drones, autonomous sort of robotics. We're seeing cybersecurity as well and cyber warfare. And so that sector in the traditional sense has really changed substantially with the inclusion of AI and what we're seeing in the innovation space as well too.
And for people who know, like you said, they know about defense spending, we see the news articles about it, and that it's more than, as you've pointed out, more than the tanks and the ships. We're now talking about software and technology. Have we missed the boat when people are looking at all these news articles about defense shares rallying? What's going on?
Yeah, I think when you sort of look at the NATO situation in particular, over the last few years, the NATO spend's probably been combined with all those countries about a third to a quarter of what the US has spent. And so now that all of this action is really on their doorstep, to some degree, they're playing a significant catch-up event. And a lot of countries that have probably been possibly asleep at the wheel as well too, and now sort of starting to review their situation. And so, yeah, in terms of where the CapEx spend is potentially going to go in this segment of the market, we can see that really accelerating fairly significantly globally.
So it feels like the defense spending is catching up. And so now it's being reflected in the share markets as well.
Yeah, it's like the we had a drought in Melbourne once, and then they built the desal plant, we've never used it again. It's the same sort of thing. You need the moment to inspire the local population to say, hey, look, we're really nervous, and you know, talks about Greenland and Canada and all the rest. And then you've got the traditional sort of fights that are going on with Israel and Russia and now Iran. Yeah, it's really making it very relevant, and in terms of the political capital to implement change from a government perspective, they have this tremendous amount of political capital now to exercise some of those pet projects that may not have been prioritized previously.
This is a bit of a trick question, but if one of our listeners say, well, I don't have any defense stocks, so why should I care?
Yeah, like, I think it's an interesting one. And here in Australia, it's a very, very small market. Like, there's sort of two or three defense stocks. You mentioned one in the opening, and then we've got the shipbuilder as well too. So you do have to think globally. And Australia, to some degree, we're so far away from all of this. And so to some degree as well, that means that we're possibly a little naive around the situation as opposed to a country that's bordering someone that may not be all that friendly. I think really when you talk about the returns and where the CapEx spend is going, it's a reality of life. If you have a cybersecurity platform on your computer, to some degree that's an extension of really trying to protect yourself. And so if you think of it on a country basis, it's really an expansion of that line of thought. I think it's potentially going to be quite a growing sector, and particularly now that we're seeing the implementation of robotics and drones, they're able to be manufactured at such a more rapid pace and also at a much lower cost point as well too. And Iran's really demonstrated that, and the Russia-Ukraine situation has as well too.
And certainly the way I also talk about it is that the superannuation funds, we forget that a lot of people have money in their super. It's exposed to global equities, for example. So in a way, you might think that you don't have exposure to it, but in fact, it is already embedded in your super fund. But the one thing that I'm unclear about is that there haven't been a lot of conversations around what are cyclical stocks and what are not cyclical stocks. Does that play into consideration when you think about defense shares?
Absolutely. And this event's probably a classic example of a cyclical sort of sector. Industrials, which is the subgroup that it kind of sits in, what we call a gig sector, really the defense stocks sit within that largely in that bracket. And they really can be cyclical. Obviously, you know, when war events are on, they really take off, or if there's a geopolitical sort of type of increasing of activity in the global sort of landscape, there is an increase. So, you know, if Drone Shield's anything to go by with the run-up in that particular stock, you do have to be careful around them. You know, just like a mining stock that can be cyclical in nature, you need to be proactively with taking profit out of those positions and rebalancing the portfolio as they sort of start to reach their 12-month sort of fair value targets or once they become overvalued. And you know, we've seen that largely in a few other sectors. You know, last year, the banking sector particularly got heavily overvalued, you know, that profit taking. So it's that combination of recognizing when a company gets overvalued to take some money off the table and bank some of that profit, and then also recognize whether you are in a cyclical stock and that proactiveness does need a little bit more attention than what other companies may do so.
It can be a bit confusing to the man on the street, though, when you talk about that, where maybe it's now time for profit taking, or the jargon that a lot of investors use is that maybe it's time for a pullback, i.e. you've missed the boat technically, because a lot of these trades should have already been in place 6 months ago, as you pointed out earlier. I want to bring a couple of terms that people use when they talk about defense stocks. One is, are they kind of an example of a fear trade, or are we talking about a longer-term structural play here where you could say, well, this is in fact the trade of the decade? Which one is it?
Yeah, I think it's certainly probably the latter. And look, the US President Trump's been pretty vocal around NATO underspending, and a lot of those sort of NATO countries, although they agreed to spend a certain percentage of GDP, have actually been for a long duration under sort of spending. And, you know, the similarities might be the housing market. You know, we're not building enough homes in Australia, and so now we're under supply, and there's major sort of government spending needs to go to. So to some degrees, you know, these types of contracts or these spending patterns are propelled by the government. You know, they're huge in nature, they're billions of dollars. You know, local submarine sort of equivalent, long projects and very profitable for the companies that secure them. And so when you sort of think, well, we have to normalize the spending back to where they should be, and then from there potentially a little bit of catch up as well too, that there is a tremendous amount of government money sloshing around, and obviously that presents tremendous opportunities for those companies in that space. We're also seeing the private equity space as well, with companies like Adral, new entrants that are coming in from drones and the like, and a whole range of companies in technology, Palantir, that was barely heard of almost sort of 18 months ago, it has really grown to some really massive sort of levels. So yeah, whenever there's government money, you know, Melbourne with the great build projects that have sort of happened, sloshing money around, there's a lot of profit to be made for the companies that are able to participate in that opportunity.
And so we're saying that this is a long-term play. But for our listeners who are still kind of trying to get their head around this idea of having a defense investing play or even considering it, do you have examples of ETFs that will provide that kind of exposure?
Yeah, absolutely. Usually the ETF is a nice entry point because it's diversified. As I mentioned, Australia doesn't have a huge exposure, so a lot of them are global. There's a couple of providers out there that are providing it. So VanEck do DFND, and that's sort of a global footprint. GlobalX do a defense tech edge. So if you are thinking more innovation around technology, they do one as well, but specifically sort of screened around the tech space. And BetaShares as well do have a more European focus. So for those that are looking to try and capitalize on the NATO trade specifically, the BetaShares sort of angle is trying to target in there. So yeah, they're really good sort of entry points. Like any entry point, you never want to be buying high and selling low. So, you know, it's like, oil at the moment, getting an entry point when the market is particularly frothy, which you would say the defense sector is at the moment, you would be wanting to see some, pullback or reduction in the share price and looking for an entry point in. And dollar cost averaging is really always a great way to sort of smooth in those entry points as well too, so you're not taking, the one-time hit on the buy price. If you're a little bit nervous or there's some trepidation, that dollar cost averaging over a couple of weeks or a couple of months can certainly assist as well too.
The question that not a lot of fund managers or financial advisors want to be asked, but we love asking it: any stock picks? Obviously, with the usual caveats that this is not personal advice.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we've been talking a fair bit about DroneShield. It's a really interesting story and certainly gone from strength to strength. They've had some interesting sort of growing up experiences from a perspective of leadership. You know, the founder sold his whole shareholding and there were some governance issues and certainly the share price came off on the back of that. But in terms of the long-term trajectory, yeah, they're doing some really interesting sort of technology around protecting sort of, areas from the incoming drones with their technology, and the company is going from strength to strength and their revenue streams are growing. It is a smaller company, so it is, quite volatile still. So in terms of position sizings, you've got to be able to wear a bit of volatility, which might be something around 10 to 20%. Is not uncommon for these small organizations that are really growing at very fast rates. But in terms of 12-month sort of price targets, there's some really good upside still left on the table over the next 12 months from that side of things. So I think from a local perspective, that would be one that would be worth a little bit of focusing on.
And it would be remiss of me not to address the elephant in the room, and that is the ethical considerations. For our listeners who might pause and think about the ethics of, if you like, investing in the defense sector, how do you navigate that?
Yeah, we sort of put it in, it's in that traditional, we call them the sin stocks, so alcohol, gaming and defense or military. So it does sit in that bucket. I think really, there's sort of two lenses you can look at it, and depending on, whether you're deep green, so you're wanting a really heavy ethical screen or open around the value set. There's one which is the aggressive sort of position, which normally defense comes up, like what's the Iran situation. The US has gone into a country, been the aggressor around the action and taken an aggressive sort of approach to the landscape. The other way is a defense, which is, protecting the country. So, having the lock on the front door so that the burglar can't walk in, or the police force that protects the local community. And certainly if the police force is there, then hopefully that's enough of a deterrent to stop people or the burglar walking straight into your house. It's having that level of protection. And so, I think for people that are possibly a little bit more concerned about the ESG overlay, the NATO trade does resonate for some a little bit closer, because that very much is a protectionist type of approach. They're really trying to ensure their borders are being respected, and certainly from a political standpoint, look at every possible avenue first before they're going to roll in the tank, so to speak. And so, yeah, those NATO trades could be a variation on it. But just like any big super fund, if you're holding a balanced fund, you're likely holding all the sin stocks, including cigarette companies and everything else that you probably don't want to know about, unless there's got some pretty deep sort of screens on it. So sometimes it's the naivety around what you may not know about is possibly what might be transplant.
Definitely. So we do a lot of educational articles around super funds, and there are options. Like I said, if you want to be in a deep green kind of strategy versus a balanced, or just being aware that the choices exist. Well, it strikes me that it's all about the choices. And you did mention this earlier, the naivete of saying we're in Australia, we're so isolated compared to someone who's in Europe, probably, and the war is knocking at their door. It's very different. But Alex, this has been a very meaningful conversation. We've covered the stock picks, why this is happening, and the ethical considerations. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
This is Michelle Baltazar for Friends with Money. As always, this is general information, not personal advice. But thank you for listening, and hope you can join us in our next episode.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.